Triple J.
Triple J.
Triple J.
Triple J. Mornings with Zan.
These days, are you happy enough to sort of look back? Because it must seem a long time ago for you, the police days.
Well, I mean, the best way to do this, of course, is to pull out a couple brandies and a very long cigar and sit back and, yes, the old days.
I know. Does it get a bit like that sometimes for you?
Well, yes, it does, after a couple brandies, but then again, I don't drink brandy. I'm more of a tequila guy myself.
It must have been an absolutely incredible time to be in London because of that sort of dichotomy of music scenes coming through.
Well, what was so cool was that it was a music scene. It was like a tribal thing, like this surge, like suddenly there was this like scene happening. And it was, yes, a very exciting time. It's fun when there's a movement like that, that everybody gets, you know, infected by.
Yeah, it's funny the way that you guys did begin out, because you had a lot more experience under your belts than all the punk bands that were coming through, especially in London at that point in time.
Yeah, we were wizened professionals of 22.
Oh, Bull, you're older than that, weren't you?
No.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm just doing my maths here. You're a bit older. You were born what, 52?
1952. That was 1977. What's the arithmetic here?
25.
Okay. What? Get out of here.
Yeah, see? You were looking...
No,
you
definitely were, wasn't 25.
You were looking through rose-colored glasses. Rocks!
Originally formed as a punk band, and we were playing the punk circuit, and we had all these punk songs, and we were trying to make headway in that world, just because it was a bandwagon, and we jumped on it, and it was served us very well, as a matter of fact, except that we were just another punk group, and it wasn't until Sting started writing better songs that we became more than that.
Triple J, back in 1998.
We had been working in London, not really striking a light, not really getting anywhere. We were kind of viewed as a kind of a cavalier outfit of Machiavellians, which was true, as a matter of fact. We were three guys on a mission, but we weren't wild, who cares about tomorrow punks. So the intelligentsia, the cognoscenti of London had kind of written us off. So we went to America, which was a whole different deal. And we had a terrific time in America. America just exploded for us, city after city. And so we were concentrating on America. And it was while we were on tour in America that we got the phone call, hey, guess what, guys, can't stand losing you. It's in the chart at 5, and it's going up with a bullet. And then the following week, it was number 1. And we were in America at the time, and it didn't really sink in until we got home. In fact, our first group of fans, the first demographic that latched onto us was teeny boppers. We started, you know, first we were a punk group, then we were a teeny bopper pin-up group, and then we became the serious musical entity that we became later.
In terms of the internal relationships within the police as well, you all seemed like very, very different characters. How did it work? What was the key to the chemistry between the three of you?
Well, I was the shy, retiring, caring, sensitive, creative, mysterious presence in the group.
Yeah.
Andy was the technical stuff, and Sting was a sex appeal.
Gee, you kept their briefs very short. Even given all the different interests that each of you have pursued since the end of the police, you still find that especially like 4 or 5 years ago, you still think that that chemistry is there, that you would be able to get up on stage and it would all fall back into place again?
I think so, as a matter of fact. Yes, I do. Because we split up when we were creatively still sparking.
Well, why did it end? Was it just that you thought you had achieved everything that you could achieve?
We were in a golden cage, and as you might imagine... right at that time, all kinds of interesting opportunities were offering themselves, and we couldn't pursue any of them because of this behemoth, the good ship Roxanne.
Would you ever do it again, do you think? In public especially?
Oh, yeah, I'm keen. You know, the police is sort of like a Corvette, unscratched, that we have sitting in the garage there. And nobody wants to take it out and dent the thing. And I would be very keen, being irresponsible myself. I very occasionally think, man, that would be great, you know, fire that sucker up and go for a ride.